There we go. All right, now we can get started. Okay, you all heard me say, we adhere strictly to the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. If you need a refresher on that, you can find it in the agenda or on the W3C.org page. We want everyone to join these calls and listen in and invite you to invite people to come to these calls. If you plan, though, to participate in any substantive way to the work that's happening, then you do need to have a W3C account and you need to have signed the license agreement. And both of the links to that can be found in a very helpful agenda. We keep notes for these meetings and audio recordings. Those can be found, a link to those can be found in the, in this helpful agenda. And we use Jitsi to, the chat in Jitsi to queue up speakers. So if you are interested in being on the queue, you can put Q plus and that will add you. Q minus will remove you. And I will be, taking the role today of kind of moderating and making sure that, we keep the conversation going. And now comes one of my favorite parts, and that is introductions and reintroductions. If you are new to the call today, new to the CCG in the last little bit, or if you just haven't been around or you've done something interesting that you want to tell us about, I would invite you to put yourself on the queue now and tell us about it. All right. How about announcements and reminders? Do we have any interesting news that we want to share with the community? Manu, I can always count on you. I should have just called on you.
The W3C TPAC is coming up. In September, the second week of September. It features a variety of work that we have incubated, in the community group, which is now in the Verifiable Credential Working Group, with, thanks to Brent and Christina for sharing and moving that work forward. So, W3C TPAC's happening. I'm trying to find the link. Here we go. September 11th through the 15th. The interesting thing about TPAC is it lets community groups participate. In fact, you can get like room time there. I don't think anyone goes just to join, you know, participate in community groups. But we do have some cross community group collaboration that is happening between the work this group is doing around verifiable credentials and the Web of Things group. They have a bunch of questions around data integrity and verifiable credentials. And I think that's happening on the Monday afternoon, just kind of cross-community collaboration there. The other thing that may happen is I'm talking with a couple of people from the privacy group where they want to talk about verifiable credentials and specifically the new online age laws that are going into account in the U.S. And some of them are concerning because they're like, hey, we should siphon all this data on an individual to make sure that they're above a certain age, like take their entire driver's license rather than doing something a bit more appropriate for the test. So Ping's interested, along with a number of other privacy folks at W3C, are interested about having a discussion around that, maybe as a breakout session on Wednesday. And I see Erica's on the queue, so that's the I will skip the rebooting announcement. The other thing to mention is that just last hour, the VCWG discussed one of the test suite proposals that went out to the group, and there's preliminary agreement to pull some of those test suites in and start developing on those. That decision, proposal, whatever, is not going to be You know, there's 7 days for someone to object to it, but it was largely plus ones. The reason that's of interest to this group is that I know we have implementers here that don't necessarily participate in Verifiable Credential Working Group. And so over the next couple of months, we'll be asking for people to start implementing, like take their implementations and hook them up with some of these test suites so that we can see if the, you know, how much of the specifications people are conformant to, and if we need to fix things either in the test suites or the specifications. That's how we get feedback before we go to the final stage of standardization. That's it for me.
Great. Thanks. Erica?
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Well, morning for me. Happy today to all of you. Manu, of course, you're welcome to talk about rebooting anytime. But I will make the announcement that rebooting the Web of Trust 12 is happening in Cologne, Germany, after the TPAC conference is rebooting. It's the 18th to the 22nd. I will put a link to tickets available on Eventbrite in the chat. And, of course, we would love to see you there. That's it.
Great. Thank you. All right. Before I move to Brent, is there anything that we need to discuss on work items? Manu.
Yeah, this came up in the VC education call yesterday, but there was, I think, a desire to maybe get some feedback from the community on what we should focus on next. So we have a number of CCG work items like the verifiable issuer and verifier lists, render method, confidence method, and a variety, and some DID methods, DID key, you know, DID web. I think there was kind of like this desire to send out a ranked choice kind of vote on what the community views as priorities, just to get some feedback, like is the next set of features we should focus on around rendering, or do people feel like the trust, registry stuff is more important, or are we missing something and people, want us to work on that instead? So just a heads up that, you know, maybe we want to circulate a questionnaire to the community and just get some broad feedback on what people want us to work on. That's it.
Okay, that's really helpful. I'll get with Harrison and Mike and we can figure out the best way to do that. And that'll be really interesting. I'm interested to see what the community says. Okay, Brent. The floor is all yours.
All right. First, want to thank the CCG chairs for the invitation. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I really like the WCC process document. As I was preparing this presentation, my original intent was to talk solely about W3C process and how recommendations move step to step. But then I saw a very, very excellent presentation from Heather Flanagan that talked more broadly. And so I shamelessly reached out to her and was able to steal most of her slides. So I've now incorporated both of those together, and hopefully what the result is will be palatable to folks. My name is Brent Zundell. I am an employee of GEN. GEN is a recent combination of NortonLifeLock and Avast Antivirus. We primarily concern ourselves with helping consumers secure their computers and devices. Along with that, we are developing products that will enable consumers to safely share aspects of themselves and their identities online. I also am the chair of a VC working group and DID working group at W3C, and that's me. So we're starting with the allusion to the notion that somewhere, if a butterfly flaps its wings just right, somewhere else in the world, this could, the resulting air currents could cause a tornado or storm somewhere. So this is an analogy for the standards development process and at which point you might want to get involved. So the small impacts on the direction of identity thought can have very far-reaching effects. There's this origin story for standards. Standards don't arrive fully formed out of the heads of their creators as a working group is formed at the W3C. Standards begin months or years prior to working groups being formed. And so people like yourselves who may want to influence standards, the encouragement is to be involved as early as possible. You have to be engaged before the butterfly has been formed. If you wait until it's too late, then it's often difficult to change the direction that things have gone. So the first part of this conversation, and I'm hoping it'll be a conversation, if anybody has comments or questions, please feel free to jump in. I prefer interruptions to a long Q&A at the end. As we go through this, you know, development phases, we'll give some examples about how that process involves, and it'll kind of culminate in, and here's how it's done at the W3C, because that is where we find ourselves. But at the very beginning of the standards development life cycle, we are in community groups at the W3C. We are in birds of a feather sessions at IETF, or you're hanging out at the Internet Identity Workshop going, oh, that session looks interesting. And the session turns into a conversation in between sessions that turns into a, well, we should get together and work on this. Ideas happen really rapidly. They often are clustered together, you know, one idea leading to another, leading to another. And like the, you know, the set of eggs laid by a butterfly, not all the ideas may be viable in the long term. But these hypothetical discussions allow for a lot of freedom, a lot of spitballing, and just it's this free-form world where ideas are the realm of conversation. And so at this stage where standards in many cases haven't even been written down yet, people can have the most influence on the direction the standard will ultimately take. Those of us who have had the privilege of participating at IIW, some of us from, you know, companies that are, we're trying to get them to support our participant in IIW, sometimes find it difficult to quantify this. We can't say, oh, we had 17 conversations, four of which will become standards in 5 to 10 years. It's impossible to really express the value of it, while at the same time, it certainly is invaluable. If you want to have that sort of influence on what standards are created and where things go. After that initial beginning incubation, and discussion, then some legs begin to form. This continues in W3C community groups. You know, the conversation, the what should we work on, the adoption of a work item, I think, is the moment in the community group that kind of heralds, we have a solid enough idea that we're ready to start writing things down. Every participant has different motivations for being involved. Sometimes those motivations are in conflict, but ultimately the result is something a bit more refined. But at this stage, there's still a lot of conversation, and there's a lot of time and effort that can be spent in continuing to incubate. Because there's so much conversation that's happening, being able to influence things at this stage is challenging because there's so much time that could be spent, and it's difficult to see sometimes where your incentives best fit with the conversations that are happening. But after the legs form, then there's this standards development implementation. We have, at this stage, really the ideas are more set. There's refinement as implementations are created and the noble ideals that have been ensconced in you know, digital formats are being actually implemented in the real world. There's some back and forth. At this stage, sometimes it's difficult to see what the progress is. If we start with a spec and then rip out half of it, is that progress? The argument is yes. If we are improving the quality of the specification, then that is progress. It would be impossible to understate the impact that open source implementations have at this stage of development. So at this point, there would be a working group formed. The working group has refined the specification and implementation say, well, I tried to do that thing that you said I had to do and it doesn't work. And so this back and forth relationship between the implementation and the specification can occur. Influencing the specification at this stage does require a higher level of investment because you need to have the resources to implement. At the W3C, you need to have the resources to join as a participant in the working group, which, as those who have, you know, participated in both community groups and working groups knows, there is a significant price difference there at the W3C. But regardless of whether it's at the W3C or elsewhere, it takes a lot of concentrated time. As the standard is adopted and existing implementations become real-world deployments, this is a process that it can take years. Like, the working group gets to the point where it says, we've got this thing, and it's done. And the standards development organization says, yes, we will put our stamp of approval on it. It goes out into the world. Years can go by as implementers engage with the standard, implement it, compare their implementation with other existing implementations. And as those implementations begin to interact and work together, this is where you begin to have continued discussions. What details do we need to add? What future work should we pursue? This is kind of an interesting transition between the, you know, final proposal of the standard and the incubation of new standards or changes to the standard. One example of this, when Verifiable Credentials Data Model 1.0 came out, we recognized that we, the producers of it, recognized that there were details that we kind of hand-waved around. There were, we wanted the spec to be broad and implementable and allow people to experiment with it in a lot of different ways. And this experimentation allowed us to come back in version 2 and say, okay, the things that we really need to nail down in version 2 are, well, the proof section. We really need to nail that down. And then any other extension points, if we're going to continue to explicitly support them, those need to be nailed down as well. And so it's this refinement of the details of the adopted standard that has led directly into the development of its successor. And at this stage of development, if you want to support it, you're saying, hey, we implemented verifiable credentials. It's great. You're promoting it. You're saying, hey, we did this. You should do it too. Or you're engaging with conversations and folks say, I have this problem. And you can say, oh, I know of a specification that addresses that problem. It's done. Let's see if our implementations are interoperable. At different standards organizations, this is roughly the timelines that you see here. At ISO, you get a proposal. At OIDF, there's a draft. At W3C, it'll start with a first public working draft. At IETF, it's we're actually going to adopt a working group. And then there's this preparation of the document. And each of these paths is different, but they all end up in a similar place, which is you end up with a publication or a final specification. The W3C calls them recommendations. IETF calls them internet standards. Each SDO has its path to get from here's the idea, we've just got to the point where we can write it down, into here's the final thing. Looking specifically at W3C process, the W3C has a process document. It is the official guide for developing recommendations at W3C. And these recommendations, they began development long, long before a working group is chartered. Most of the work that we have as work items in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group began in the community group here. And we're grateful for that incubation, because we couldn't do what we do without you guys doing what you do. Quick note, not all publications are standards. At W3C, you can have a recommendation, which is a web standard. You can have a note, which is, this is something that the working group wanted to publish. Here you go. It's a note. At IETF, there are best practices documents, like here's the recommendation, but here's how you should use the recommendation. Here's the best practices currently for how best to use it. And there are informative things that come up. And for folks outside of the standards development process, this aspect can be quite confusing. Often I've heard people point to, oh, we implemented that specification. And what they're actually pointing to is, well, it's a proposal somewhere. It's not quite done in the process. It's not finished developing and maturing. Whether it's a final community group draft or a working group note. Yeah, and that's everything on the slide. I encourage folks with, a sadomasochistic bent to click on the process document, engage yourself with that work of literature. It's got some fascinating things in it. Specifically, at W3C, it comes down to decisions. W3C strives for consensus. Consensus is defined in the process document. But the section that I find very illuminating is, it's about decisions. What decisions are made depend on the group that needs to make the decision. So group decisions could be this working group has decided. The group decision could be, this interest group has decided. The group could be, we as the W3C team have decided. Another decision by a group is what are known as W3C decisions, which is where the advisory committee of the W3C is the group responsible for making the decision. And when we get to the final like flow chart for recommendations, you will see at each point it indicates which group is responsible for making the decision there. Before we can jump into this process and go from first, second, third, nth public working draft through candidate recommendation, proposed recommendation, advisory committee review, W3C recommendation to the end, before we even get there, at W3C there needs to be a charter. I believe there are folks here who have become more familiar with the charter development process at W3C than they ever wanted to know. Unfortunately, the process document is rather light when it comes to chartering. I'm skipping ahead. Anyway, I'll come back to this slide after I talk chartering because chartering is more important. If there's interest in forming a group, a charter, it says a charter is drafted and presented by the W3C team, which means the team makes a decision to present a charter to the W3C. How the charter gets to the team, how it's been drafted, the process for creating this document, none of that is explained in the process document. It's just kind of an amorphous thing. The document, the process says the charter is, and it has to have these things in it. It's very clear exactly what a charter has to have in it. It's not clear who's supposed to do all that. My understanding is that fuzziness is deliberate. But once the team makes the decision to present the charter, then the advisory committee is the group responsible for discussing and ultimately approving or rejecting that charter. So the consensus that is that the W3C process is concerned with around charters occurs within the advisory committee. This is important to the overall process because only working groups can actually develop recommendations. Unless you have a chartered working group, you can't produce a recommendation at the W3C. Going back at W3C, just a reminder, there's working groups, there's community groups, there's interest groups, and then there are governing groups. The advisory committee is a governing group. The technical architecture group is a governing group. There's an advisory board. But for the most part, we are concerned with community groups and working groups because that's where we are engaged. And that is where, for the most part, the flow of standards occurs. Developing recommendations inside of working groups happens because there is a charter that defines a scope of work, and that scope of work includes we're going to work on this or this other recommendation. Documents produced by working groups are called technical reports. Technical reports can be recommendations, they can be notes, they can be, registries. But recommendations, like we said, they've almost always been incubated elsewhere prior to the working group being formed. And now we have the money slide. Here we go. Okay. Inside of a working group, the working group decides that they want to adopt a work item. They wish to publish a first public working draft of a recommendation. The decision to produce or publish a first public working draft includes, okay, this is the repository we want to go in. When it's published on w3c.org, what's going to be the link for it? What's the short name? And once the group is on this proposal and what the initial content is going to be, then it goes to the team for approval. Now, a document can stay in the working draft stage for a very long time. This is where the bulk of iteration and development occurs. All of the documents that are currently work items in the VC working group are currently in the working draft stage. We've been working on them for more than a year now, and this is where we're still out. And in order to get past this working draft stage, in order to go into candidate recommendation, which is the next stage, the working group needs to make a decision. The working group is the body that comes to consensus for moving from working draft to what's called a candidate recommendation. And that's the boxes in the center here. So there are candidate recommendation snapshots, and there are candidate recommendation drafts. And the candidate recommendation snapshot is where you say, okay, the working draft, we think it's done. All of the normative elements that we need to have in it are there. We think we're done. And so working group decision, team approval, and then we have a candidate recommendation snapshot. Now, the little dotted arrow that comes back to this from the CRS bubble, out of it and back to it, this is an iteration of the snapshot itself. This is possible. You can say, we just need to make another snapshot. Taking the snapshot is a big deal. It requires that same working group decision. It requires the team approval. And it starts off a number of timelines that need to be seen out in order to allow review to happen of this snapshot. A new snapshot is required if you need to make normative changes based on feedback that's obtained either during a wide review or from implementers who are giving you feedback. So usually what happens is you go from the candidate recommendation snapshot into a candidate recommendation draft. And the draft is where you iterate on non-normative changes to the candidate recommendation snapshot.
So, Brent, can I ask you to push your slide forward and push it back again? Because it, when we see it, there you go. And maybe do that a couple of times so we can see it. I feel like this is when, it's been, we've been able to see your slides at the beginning and then kind of at the end. And that's been working fine. But this one I felt like was so important. I'm sorry to interrupt, but just, wanted to make sure that folks could see it.
No problem. You're able to see it now?
Yeah.
Okay. So you go from the working draft to the candidate recommendation snapshot. And this is the declaration by the working group that we think we're done. We don't want to make any normative changes to the document. We're asking for implementers to implement it. We're looking for review from the necessary horizontal review groups at W3C. These consist of the privacy interest group. There's a security group. There's an internationalization group. There is an accessibility group. And there's the technical architecture group. And all of these look at the specification from different points of view at this candidate recommendation snapshot, and say, yes, we don't think this is going to break the web, or we think this has these privacy concerns. You should address this, or the security of this is terrible, or the security of this is great. It's that feedback from horizontal review that leads to the candidate recommendation drafts. Now, in the draft stage, all it takes is a working group decision to move back into another draft. You can publish as many candidate recommendation drafts as you want because all you're doing is changing the document editorially. If you move back into another snapshot, that requires the working group to decide and the team to approve, because it starts off the review again. It's like, oh, we've made normative changes. Now we need to ask those who reviewed it to review it again, or at least to review the difference. And that process can take anywhere from, theoretically, it could take as short as 6 weeks. Most cases, it takes 2 to 3 months per snapshot. After the candidate recommendation phase, this is the phase at which essentially the working group is done. We have written the spec. We've iterated on it. We've completed the spec to our own satisfaction. And then we've completed the spec to the satisfaction of the implementers and reviewers. And you can see that green arrow going from CRS to PR is a working group decision. We say, as a working group, we have decided we're done with candidate recommendations. We can show that we have appropriate implementation of every normative feature of the specification.
Sorry, Brent. given what Kimberly just said, I'm guessing that maybe if you move your cursor around while you're speaking, that's going to keep the display going. Because, like, you were just talking about a green arrow and we couldn't see an arrow.
I will try to pay more attention. Sorry again. I will keep the mouse moving.
No, I blame Jitsi.
Okay. So, yes, the green arrow from CRS to PR, working group decides, and just is formally resolving that they have demonstrated appropriate implementation. So not only is this specification complete, but it's complete and implementable, ideally in an interoperable way. And here's the report that shows that. And then it goes into proposed recommendation, at which point the body that needs to come to consensus on the specification is the advisory committee to make what is called a W3C decision for moving it from proposed recommendation to recommendation. Now, the proposed recommendation phase is generally where you experience things like formal objections. The result of a formal objection, the result of a W3C decision to not accept the document, are shown by these dotted red lines. And the dotted red line could say, this proposed recommendation has these things and we want it to become a candidate recommendation snapshot again. That could be the result of the AC review. Another result of the AC review is, this proposed recommendation needs to become a working draft again. There are enough normative changes that we feel that are required that, you know, going back to that process is where it's necessary. I didn't mention the dotted red line from the CRS bubble to the WD bubble. But at any time, the working group can decide, okay, we got into candidate recommendation. We were a little overeager, or, you know, the feedback we've gotten shows that there is this flaw we didn't see. We're going to move it to be a working draft again. And anytime something goes back, the green arrows moving it forward are all still valid paths. I don't know of many recommendations that have gone the working draft, candidate recommendation, proposed recommendation back to working draft. But the process allows for that, and so we need to be aware of it as a possibility. In proposed recommendation, if either the advisory committee comes to consensus and approves it, or whether consensus can be determined by process rather than the individual groups, and I'll talk about that a bit more, then the W3C decision is made to move it into a recommendation, and it's done. So I do want to talk to this a little bit. When we talk about working group decision, the ideal model of that is everyone in the working group unanimously agrees that this thing is ready to make the step. We're going to unanimously agree that the working draft is ready to be a candidate recommendation snapshot. That's the ideal. W3C process, for each group that needs to make the decision, there is the possibility of consensus being determined, or when consensus can't be decided, for a chair decision to be made in a working group, or for a CEO decision to be made in terms of the advisory committee. Usually there is a single person or small group of people that ultimately decide what the best path forward is after consensus has failed to be reached. And so the working group decisions that move the process forward, those could have been everybody agreed but these two or three people, and the chairs then decided to move forward anyway, recognizing those objections. The W3C decision, moving it from proposed recommendation to recommendation, could be all of these advisory committee members approved it except for this small set. The team attempted to work with that small set and usually the chairs and editors of the documents to see if consensus can be found there. Failing that, the formal objections will be presented to the advisory board and the technical advisory group. A subset of those members will then deliberate on the formal objection and determine whether or not the formal objection should stand or whether it should be overridden. And in my experience, it's almost the formal objections are usually noted and then overridden. This is what happened with the decentralized identifier specification. And then ultimately that W3C decision to become a recommendation. And I realize that this slide, though, you know, has a lot of little bits and bobs on it, a lot of arrows and directions, and a lot of the detail that I've gone into isn't represented in text on the slide for folks who want to dive deeper into the process and all of the possibilities going here and there and to read about chair decisions and CEO decisions and appeals to those and the whole process from stem to stern. I encourage you to jump into the process document. It's all written down. At this point, I think time to wrap up. So the time to get involved in standards development is as early as possible. We recognize that not everyone has either the capacity or the support from their work to engage, but in being involved in community groups, showing up to IAW for identity-related specifications, these are the best ways to influence things and ideas before they even enter into incubation. The true value add in later stages comes from how well you implement and how hard you work to interoperate. It generally doesn't pay to be like, hey, yeah, we did this spec, but now we're doing all of these other things that are amazing. Because yes, the things may be amazing, but it's that interoperable component that truly provides the most value for actual people. But that said, if you're going to be an implementer of these standards, the best way to do that and to implement well is to actually be engaged with the process, to be involved, particularly in the W3C, in that candidate recommendation phase. Yes, we have implemented. Yes, we've engaged with the test suite to provide that feedback. So you need to be involved in the process. And finally, once again, thank you to Heather Flanagan for constructing most of these slides. If you haven't had the privilege of meeting her, she is a fantastic individual, incredibly talented and intelligent, and just utterly delightful to be around. It's worth going to IAW just for the chance to sit down and have a chat with her, in my opinion. And with that, I've been talking far too much for far too long, and I'm happy to take questions if folks have them.
Thank you so much, Brent. It was, again, we had a little issue with your slides coming in and out, but it really forced me to like look at your slide quickly and then listen. And that was, actually really helpful for me to building the context. And so I have a couple of questions before I turn it over to the queue. And I will be looking for Heather, at IAW. So one of the things that sort of came to mind as you were talking and going through this sort of circular process of, you know, we bring this standard forward and then it's kind of got to go back around and it goes back around a few times. And just thinking about how dynamic and how quickly evolving technology is, it seems to me that, like, for the most part, working groups kind of continue on. Is that correct? Like they kind of release their recommendation and then they've got to kind of revise that after a little bit of time. Is that, and then they sort of have to keep doing that. Is that the case?
Yes. So at W3C, working groups are very strictly chartered. It's rare for a working group to exist in its current form for more than a couple of years. And the scope of the working group is very strict. It's, you know, these are the documents that you can work on and here's what you can do with them. it's generally been the case in working groups that I've been involved with at W3C that after the working group has produced a recommendation, another working group of the same name will be chartered again, and the scope of that working group will be to maintain the recommendation that was published.
Okay.
And as that maintenance occurs, then you might, like for verifiable credentials, the original working group released version 1, a maintenance working group released version 1.1 with some, you know, non-normative changes and responses to some bugs that were found. And then another working group has been formed to work on version 2, along with some associated specifications there. At IETF, it's a little different. At IETF, you form a working group, and the rechartering of the working group and the work items that get brought into that working group are a bit more fluid and flexible. And so there, every SDO does things a bit differently. And I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you. And I guess, you know, I'm feeling like there's so much work and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, if you're a new person, you're coming into this space and you're trying to sort of get your feet on the ground and figure out which direction to even look to, do you feel like that process document is the place to start, or is there another place that you would give someone to start?
The place to start is here. If you are involved in identity credentials and decentralized identity in any way, you should be involved in the credentials community group. Other places are, like I said, IIW is a great place to go. It's a conference that occurs twice a year in the Bay Area. The Decentralized Identity Foundation is another place where these documents can be incubated and moved, you know, then ultimately moved into a standards development organization. I wouldn't recommend the process document as a primer for how to get involved. The best way is to talk to other people that are involved and talk to them not only about what's the process, but come with your ideas and say, here's this idea I have for this thing. Is this a good idea? If it is, where should we continue talking about it? Because that initial pre-incubation phase at community groups, at IIW, are where these conversations really, really happen. And so for folks wanting to be involved, my strong encouragement would be listen to the conversations that are happening, find one that sounds fascinating to you, and then ask the people who are involved, you know, the other people who you hear talking, I want to participate. Where do I go to do that?
That is a great suggestion. And I'm going to add that to our newcomer slide deck. And then my last question is just about, you know, as you were talking about the work being incubated here in the community groups, you know, do you have any recommendations or tips for us as a community group sending what's been incubated to make sure that it's valuable?
I think the process has been working really well.
Great.
So I don't think I have any tips there. I think sometimes, especially for newcomers, there may be some hesitancy in formally proposing things. But at the community group stage, it's okay to propose something and, you know, seek for other people who are interested in developing it further, and for that idea to, it's not a failure for that idea to have been explored and that exploration having been recorded and then it not moving on to recommendation. I've had a number of, you know, incubated specifications that the process of developing it was very valuable, even though the specification, you know, quote unquote, never went anywhere, because of the impact that it has on future incubation. It's not only the recommendations that spawn, you know, greater details and, you know, further work. It's any incubation that, you know, has gone to any point. You can say, oh, we tried that, so let's try it a different way. Or, oh, that one aspect that we tried, let's actually turn that into something else. It was some of the earliest conversations about verifiable credentials that kind of initiated the recognition of the need for the decentralized identifiers. Hmm. And so specifications have this, the incubation process has this amazing interplay. And my encouragement to folks here is, if you've got an idea, if you've got a thought, talk to people about it, and don't hesitate to see what it would take to make it a formal work item here, because you may just stumble upon something kind of amazing.
That's great. Thank you so much. That's really, really helpful. All right. Manu, I think you're first on the queue.
Yes, thanks. Amazing, Brent. That was fantastic. Best presentation on standards that I've seen. So with that, I think I want to go back to like how people can participate, right? Because we have a number of people at CCG and not everyone's fully engaged in participating, and that might be because of lack of time, money, whatever. But I wanted to highlight that like there are multiple ways to participate. One of them is you've got a great idea and you want to make it work and you find your tribe to do it and you push it forward. The other way is to kind of get involved with, as much as I hate to say, the stuff nobody wants to touch, like the janitorial stuff, the stuff that really needs, work put into it, but, no one's stepping up. I'm wondering if you could speak to, Brent, like, invited experts and why they come into the group and maybe ways, other kind of non-standard ways that people can help.
Yes, happy to. So participation in the standards development process does not require formally joining a working group, being a W3C member organization. The meetings are for the participants to have conversations, but every group has a GitHub repository. And in that GitHub repository, anyone can raise an issue. Anyone can comment on an issue. Anyone can jump into any conversation that's been had, in the meetings and say, well, here's this issue. I care about it. I think I have an idea for how it can be fixed. These are things that can be shared. So folks who want to engage with the process, but may not have the backing to formally join the working group, please join the mailing list. Please engage on the mailing list and, please track and open issues. There are, also options to raise PRs. Mostly the PRs are limited to working group participants, and this is just because of the royalty and IPR agreements that participants make. It's not that, oh, we've paid and therefore we get to do it. It's more that our lawyers have signed the agreements that if our ideas get incorporated here, we're not going to require anybody to pay us to use them. Is what it boils down to. So engaging on that level is great. For folks who, this is primarily for independent folks, for academics, who want to be engaged in the working group, who actively want to write PRs and edit the specification and, be busy in moving the work forward and attend the meetings. There is an option to request to be an invited expert. It's kind of odd. Like, you have to apply to be invited. For some reason, that terminology like throws me a little bit every time, but it's a relatively straightforward process. You go to the working group page, you try to join the working group, and then you say, well, I'm not affiliated with anybody, so I'm going to request to join as an invited expert. This is, being accepted as an invited expert differs from group to group. Generally, it's always a chair decision whether or not you've been invited as an expert. In the verifiable credentials working group, we do have an expectation that invited experts will either be fully engaged in the working group, raising PRs, possibly being named as editors on specifications and, you know, directly moving the work forward, or they will have some sort of, I've been thinking of it kind of as an ambassadorial presence. So folks who are, for the verifiable credentials working group, folks who may not be able to engage, you know, writing PRs and things, but can represent the verifiable credentials working group and their verifiable credentials work as they engage in the rest of the community. For our working group, that's another, reason that we would consider accepting you as an invited expert. Hopefully that answers your question.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Brent. This was really, really great. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the recording and being able to share that with some of the new folks in the community. Thank you all so much. One of the things I learned today was that this is an Apple issue, and so Safari to Safari, and so we'll make a note in the agenda that maybe Safari is your best bet for using Jitsi right now. So thank you all so very much, and we'll see you next week. And we will try to make sure, Ted, that we get a link to the slide deck. I definitely want it to.
Yes, I will provide that.
Great. Thank you so much.